Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off once again in Morocco, where it's the fourth day of action at the African Nations Championship Football Tournament. Our VOA football fans will remember this competition is for locally based players in Africa, and they must play in their domestic leagues. Tuesday's matches are being played in Morocco's coastal city of Agadir, located on the shore of the Atlantic Ocean near the foot of the Atlas Mountains. In the first game, Angola is going against Burkina Faso, and that will be followed by a fixture between Cameroon and Congo Brazzaville. In results Monday, Libya defeated Equatorial Guinea 3-0, while Nigeria and Rwanda played to a scoreless draw. Both matches were played in Morocco's northwestern city of Tangier. The Libyans lifted the trophy at this tournament in 2014 when it was staged in South Africa. Saleh Al-Taher scored two early goals for Libya in Tangier Monday as he found the net in the 12th and 17th minutes. Zakaria Al-Harash sealed the victory with Libya's third goal in the 86th minute. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Libyan midfielder Mohamed Aliat, who set up all three of his team's goals. Meanwhile, Nigeria was unlucky in its match against Rwanda. The Nigerians hit the woodwork three times, but the final score stands from Tangier, Nigeria 0, Rwanda 0. That result leaves both teams 2 points behind Libya in Group C. The next matches in this group will be played on Friday in Tangier. Libya will play Nigeria, and Rwanda will go against Equatorial Guinea. The 16-nation tournament, also called CHAN, will continue through February 4th when the final is played in Casablanca. Meanwhile, a Confederation of African Football inspection team is in Cameroon to assess the country's preparations for next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament. There are concerns that Cameroon will not be ready, as some of the stadiums are still under construction. But Cameroon sports journalist Michael Isifu says it's not just the stadiums the government needs to work on.
The only thing that is putting pressure on the government of Cameroon are other facilities, not only stadia. We have health facilities, we have hotels, and we have roads. I mean, the roads are bad, and some are yet to be constructed, especially in the new sites. So I think that all is not well. All is not well. When you look at Japoma, work is at 17%. In Olumbi, not really different. The images we have from these grounds, very discouraging because they are still at foundation level.
Cameroon has one of the proudest pedigrees in African football. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon were the first African team to reach the quarterfinals at a World Cup, doing so at Italy 1990. But Michael Isifu says infrastructure in Cameroon has not matched the team's achievements on the pitch.
I think the country has not done much in terms of investing in the sport, because Cameroon has won the Africa Cup of Nations 5 times. They are celebrated on the continent after Egypt. But when you look at infrastructure in the sport, you would really see that the glory, the achievement does not really match what is on the ground in terms of infrastructure in football. So that has been the concern of many a Cameroonian.
Meanwhile, these two Cameroonian fans are optimistic the country will be ready to stage the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations tournament.
I am very hopeful, very certain that Cameroon will host. We did it in 2016 when Cameroon hosted the 2016 African Female Nation Cup. We are certain that our country will be ready in just about getting to a year. We will be ready.
Well, to me, it will be a miracle if Cameroon doesn't host the AFCON, because I know this country, I know the history of this country. This is a country that is reputable for surprises. The souvenir of Gabon 2017 is there to show.
A couple of Cameroonian football fans, McWater Jepte and Leslie Angu, commenting on their country's readiness to stage next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament. And this Sunny Side of Sports programming note, reporter Moki Edwin Kinzika in Yaoundé, Cameroon, will join us on Wednesday's show with a report on Cameroon's Nations Cup preparations. So please, keep on the sunny side.
So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all the way if you keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to tennis, let's go down under to Melbourne, Australia, and the year's first Grand Slam tournament. Defending men's champion Roger Federer got off to a good start as he tries to win the trophy once again. Federer beat Aljaz Bedene on Tuesday in straight sets. Final score from Melbourne, 6-3, 6-4, and 6-3. Novak Djokovic, the Serbian star, enjoyed a successful return to the court on Tuesday in Melbourne as he defeated American Donald Young, 6-1, 6-2, and 6-4. Stan Wawrinka, who like Djokovic had not played since Wimbledon last year because of injury, well, he was victorious on Tuesday in Melbourne. He beat Ricardas Berankis 6-3, 6-4, 2-6, and 7-6. Women's world number one Simona Halep, Johanna Konta, and Angelique Kerber were also among those in action on Tuesday, and all three progressed. Let's give another Sunny Side of Sports salute to Maria Sharapova. She had a successful return to the court in Melbourne. She was also a winner on Tuesday. If you remember, Sharapova was out of action for about 15 months after she tested positive for meldonium at the 2014 Australian Open. She's back on the court, and she was a winner on Tuesday. In pro boxing, Wednesday marks what would have been the 76th birthday of boxing great Muhammad Ali, who died in 2016. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, VOA's Adam Phillips tells us about Ali's early years.
Muhammad Ali was born Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. in Louisville, Kentucky, on January 17, 1942, to a poor family. One day, when Cassius was 12, someone stole his beloved bicycle. A white policeman named Joe Martin heard Clay crying and vowing to beat up the thief. On the spot, Martin offered to mentor the boy at his boxing gym downstairs as a way to channel his anger. In 1960, just 6 years later, Cassius Clay would win Olympic gold in Rome.
The most popular USA winner was the lighthearted Cassius Marcellus Clay V in white here, who easily defeated Poland's Zbigniew Patrykowski. Cassius Clay, the winner for the USA.
Legend has it that back in Kentucky, Cassius Clay angrily threw his gold medal into the river because of the racism he encountered in Louisville. Still, he was quickly snapped up by a small group of Louisville investors who sensed his promise, says New York University history professor Jeffrey Sammons, who doesn't really believe that Ali actually threw his medal away, but the author of Rebel with a Cause and Beyond the Ring, The Role of Boxing in American Society, says that all the hype around Cassius Clay was certainly real enough.
He becomes a Madison Avenue creation, a breath of fresh air. Boxing had grown stale. There were all kinds of issues with organized crime. They saw in this young, brash Cassius Clay someone who would make boxing marketable in a way that it once had been. He modeled himself on, in some ways, Jack Johnson, because he talked to his opponent, but on the other hand, on Gorgeous George, who was this foppish wrestler who had all this shtick, you know, with perfume and blonde hair and effeminacy, etc., that he was the beautiful one. And, of course, young Clay referred to himself as beautiful, but also as the greatest.
This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. This I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world in 64.
This patter earned Cassius Clay the nickname the Louisville Lip.
Many people didn't think that he was for real, that he was more mouth than skill or talent. And, of course, many of these opponents were not very skillful boxers, or they were well past their prime.
As when, in November 1962, Clay fought Archie Moore in Los Angeles. The man, fans dubbed Ageless Archie, entered professional boxing 7 years before Clay was born. Clay accurately predicted before the fight, "Don't block the aisle and don't block the door. You will all go home after round four."
Ripping punches by Clay and Moore goes down. Cassius raises his hands over his head and it's all over. Clay wins by a fourth round knockout as predicted.
Soon bigger bouts were in the offing. Ali had won all 19 of his professional fights when he challenged Sonny Liston for the heavyweight championship of the world. Hulking and powerful, with a criminal record and alleged ties to the mafia, Liston accepted Clay's challenge. The fight was set for February 25, 1964, in Miami Beach, Florida. During the run-up to the bout, Clay continually taunted Liston to reporters, calling him a big, ugly bear who even smells like a bear.
"I'm handsome, I'm fast, I'm pretty, and can't possibly be beat. If you like to lose your money, be a fool and bet on Sonny."
When Ali showed up for the weigh-in the night of the match, the betting odds were 8-1 against him. Astoundingly, Clay vanquished Liston in the seventh round in a technical knockout.
"Clay has won! Clay has won!"
Then the new heavyweight champion of the world does something else, perhaps even more dramatic. Immediately after the fight, he announces that he had converted to the Nation of Islam, that he was changing his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. "Cassius Clay is a slave name," he said. "I am Muhammad Ali, a free name. It means beloved of God, and I insist people use it when they speak to me." Jeffrey Sammons says this frightened and angered many people.
Many people saw the Nation of Islam, or even Islam itself, as sort of a non-Western religion. So that made Ali an outcast. Someone said that they'd rather have someone who's identified with organized crime than to have someone identified with Islam, or in this instance, the Nation of Islam, which was known at that time by many as Black Muslims.
Although Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad and his follower, the Black Power activist Malcolm X, both rejected the term, the Nation of Islam did portray whites as devils and blacks as racially and spiritually superior.
One of the things about the Nation of Islam is that it rejected integration. It believed in separation of the races, which ironically made it very popular with the Ku Klux Klan. Malcolm X actually met with Klan. It also resonated with someone like Richard Russell, who was a staunch segregationist senator from Georgia, and Russell was very supportive of Ali. So it just shows you there can be strange bedfellows in politics and boxing.
In December 1965, Madison Square Garden photographer George Kolinsky was still an amateur. He was in Miami when he spotted Ali crossing the street to the storied Fifth Street Gym, where the champ was training to fight Ernie Terrell the following March. Knowing that Ali was now one of the most famous and controversial celebrities in the world, Kolinsky decided to follow Ali inside, even if it meant using a bit of bluff with Angelo Dundee, Ali's trainer, at the door.
And I said, I'm the photographer of Madison Square Garden. At that point, I was only the photographer of my family. Angelo Dundee looked at me and he said, okay, comedian, come on in. So I went into the gym and I see Muhammad Ali working out.
What was it like to see that?
Pretty excited that I would be able to take pictures of somebody famous in an area that was pretty private. We had instant chemistry. We had, at least I had, the trust almost immediately in Muhammad Ali looking into my camera, and he somehow was trying to be good to me so that I would get good pictures.
The 8 pictures Kolinsky took that day did land him a photographer's job at Madison Square Garden. More important to Kolinsky, however, was that the initial unspoken trust he shared with Ali developed into a friendship that lasted a lifetime.
And that friendship was very, very important to me because, number one, I was able to get really great shots of probably the world's most famous-looking face. And secondly, Muhammad Ali, for all the brutality that boxing represents, also represented to me a beauty where he tried to be friendly and kind.
A current exhibit of George Kolinsky's photographs of Muhammad Ali at the New York Historical Society shows many of the softer sides of Ali behind the scenes. There are pictures that show him eating, washing up, or just clowning around. One memorable shot shows Ali napping in his hotel room between workouts. The muscle tone and gleam of his torso make him look every bit the champ. Yet one can also sense the all-too-vulnerable human being within. Of course, most of the most famous Ali photographs were shot in public, either in the ring, training, sparring with the press, or showing off to the public. Muhammad Ali was a fascinating subject, says Kolinsky, because everything he did radiated charisma.
Whenever you walk down the street with Muhammad Ali, walk into a building, into a lobby, whenever you walked into an area where there were a lot of people, everybody sort of gawked at him as if, wow, that's Muhammad Ali. How many people in this world have that charisma that he had?
Ali often projected an image of barely contained masculine rage. This was publicity gold. But Kolinsky says Ali was actually the gentlest man he ever knew.
Not many people know, unless you were speaking to him in private, that he really spoke in private in a whisper.
In 1967, the United States was deeply ensnared in the Vietnam War. It was a brutal conflict which sharply divided the American public. Muhammad Ali was one of hundreds of thousands of young American men who were drafted. He refused to serve, citing the Quran's injunction not to fight in Christian wars. Further alienating himself from the white establishment, he told reporters he had no problem with the communist Viet Cong he'd be expected to kill.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality, raped and killed my mother and father. How can I shoot them poor people? I'll just take me to jail.
According to Jeffrey Sammons, that's just what the government set out to do.
He's convicted of draft evasion, fined $10,000, and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Of course, there are appeals, but at the same time, the boxing authorities are also acting. They're removing his boxing license, stripping him of his heavyweight title, and his passport is revoked, so he cannot box anywhere. He can't box here, and he can't leave the country to box somewhere outside of the United States.
Ali then took to the college lecture circuit, where he got a sympathetic audience among students who also opposed the war. during what would otherwise have been the heart of his stellar boxing career.
So it's from 67 to 70 that he's not able to box and earn a living. He said, I understand it. I'm standing up for principle. You know, I can't sell myself out.
It took a lot of guts to do that, right?
Oh, absolutely. On one hand, where all of this hurt his boxing career, it made him into a legendary figure. It made him into a transcendent figure. And I maintain that that's when he really becomes the people's champ.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Thanks, Adam. I really enjoyed your Muhammad Ali feature. If you tuned into Monday's show, you heard world heavyweight boxing champion Anthony Joshua announce his unification title fight against WBO heavyweight champion Joseph Parker. That fight will take place on March 31st in Cardiff, Wales. Well, the trash talk between Parker and Joshua has officially begun. Parker has described Joshua as king of steroids, is the way Parker puts it. King of steroids. He's quoted as saying, and then he's referring to AJ, if you're that big and that muscly, there's something wrong. I've heard the word, I've looked at him, and I've seen him. Is he using steroids? Well, I don't know, but it's a possibility, says Parker, throwing down the gauntlet with the trash talk. In more heavyweight boxing news, WBC champion Deontay the Bronze Bomber Wilder has officially set March 3rd for his next title fight against Cuba's Luis Ortiz. The fight will take place in New York City at Brooklyn's Barclays Center Arena. That is the home arena of the Brooklyn Nets in the National Basketball Association. And how about some National Basketball Association news? Joel Embiid, the young Cameroonian star for the Philadelphia 76ers, he had 34 points and 11 rebounds Monday night to help lead the Philadelphia 76ers to a 117-111 victory over the Toronto Raptors. In more results, in a rematch of the 2017 NBA Finals, the reigning champion Golden State Warriors defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers 118-108. Kevin Durant scored 32 points for the Warriors. Stephen Curry added 23 points, and the Warriors extended their road winning streak to 13 games with that victory in Cleveland. LeBron James had 32 points for the Cavaliers, who saw their home winning streak snapped at 13 games. More results from the NBA on Monday. Kemba Walker scored 17 of his 20 points in the second half to spark the Charlotte Hornets to a 118-107 victory over the Detroit Pistons. The New York Knicks defeated the Brooklyn Nets 119-104 in a game between two New York clubs. The Latvian giant Kristaps Porzingis had 26 points and 9 rebounds for the Knicks. Elsewhere, the Atlanta Hawks spread their wings and scored a 102-99 victory over the San Antonio Spurs. The Chicago Bulls beat the Miami Heat 119-111. The Memphis Grizzlies defeated the Los Angeles Lakers 123-114. The NBA's reigning most valuable player, Russell Westbrook, had another big game for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Westbrook had 19 points, 16 rebounds, and 9 assists as the Thunder storm past the Sacramento Kings 95-88. And one more result, the Indiana Pacers defeated the Utah Jazz 109-104 on a very busy day in the NBA. And that wraps up the January 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Trafficking in persons, also known as modern slavery or human trafficking, is a global multi-billion-dollar crime and egregious human rights abuse that robs individuals of their freedom. It splinters communities, threatens public safety and national security, distorts economic markets, and undermines rule of law. It feeds corruption, fuels other criminal activity, and helps fund terrorist activities. The International Labor Organization estimates that 24.9 million people are victims of human trafficking globally. Of these, 16 million people are in forced labor exploitation, nearly 5 million in forced sexual exploitation, and 4 million persons in state-imposed forced labor. No country in the world is immune to human trafficking. It is happening in every corner of the globe, in people's homes, in factories, in hotels, on farms, on fishing vessels, in countless places where one might not expect it. Human trafficking also happens in the United States. This means that if we are to fight this scourge, we must begin at home. That is why January is declared by presidential proclamation National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. President Donald Trump continued that tradition, stating in his proclamation that human traffickers prey on their victims by promising a life of hope and greater opportunity while delivering only enslavement. Instead of delivering people to better lives, traffickers unjustifiably profit from the labor and toil of their victims, who they force, through violence and intimidation, to work in brothels and factories, on farms and fishing vessels, in private homes, and in countless industries. The president further emphasized that during National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, we recommit ourselves to eradicating the evil of enslavement. Human trafficking is a modern form of the oldest and most barbaric type of exploitation. It has no place in our world. This month, we do not simply reflect on this appalling reality. We also pledge to do all in our power to end the horrific practice of human trafficking that plagues innocent victims around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 1730 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. This is James Bratte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.